everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast. I am pleased to be joined on the line by Bo Sample. He is one of the founding members of the Fat Babies, and they're going to be performing at the Chicago Jazz Fest Saturday, August 31st at 1:50 p.m. on the Von Freeman Pavilion. Now, these, we are sponsors of the Chicago Jazz Festival, so we're going to be doing a lot of previews to give everybody a little taste of what they can hear down at the fest throughout the 4 days, which happens August 29th through September 1st. So, Bo, thanks for jumping on the line here for a few minutes and helping me preview your set coming up at the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit, the Fat Babies. Now, you guys are fairly, I think it's fairly rare that your age group is so into the 1920s and 30s music that you decided to start a trad band that really emulates the sound of, like, Jelly Roll Morton, King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, Bix Beiderbecke. I mean, so is that this music that were you always interested in this music coming up? How did the whole band come about?
Well, I got originally interested in the jazz from 1920s and 30s as a high schooler. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, and when I was starting out playing music when I was about 14 years old, I kind of got into, first I got into old country music, the music of Hank Williams and Johnny Cash and Lefty Frizzell and all these guys. And that kind of led me to Western swing music, which was, a Texas and Oklahoma type of jazz, Bob Wills and Milton Brown and the Brownies and all these, Western swing dance bands are basically playing swing music with steel guitars and fiddles and stuff. And through that repertoire that they were playing and reading interviews and actually meeting some of the old guys that were playing around San Antonio, I realized all these guys were interested in New Orleans music from the 20s. So they were listening to guys like Louis Armstrong and Benny Goodman and Chicago groups and New Orleans groups, Kansas City groups, Count Basie. And so I just kind of kept digging and digging, and then I kind of ended up, arriving at the 1920s jazz through that way, almost like a excavation, So, I never played it really in that kind of form until later. And I always wanted to, but I never could find the musicians. And then just kind of at some point, I was asked to move back to San Antonio to play with a group that's been playing there since the 60s called the Jim Cullum Jazz Band. And they do, they do a lot of, the same kind of stuff that we're doing. And I thought about it. I really wanted to. They were like heroes of mine when I was young. So it was an honor to be asked to do that. But then in the end, I decided, why don't I just stay in Chicago, which is, where a lot of this music came from, and start my own group. And instead of joining a group of guys that have been doing it their whole life, kind of do what they did and start doing it when we're young, So luckily, and initially I didn't really realize it was going to be such a large band. I just thought maybe I'd find a few guys, and I met some guys and they introduced me to other people. And all of a sudden we had a whole band. So it was kind of lucky in that regard.
How did you end up moving to Chicago originally?
So my wife and I moved here 13 years ago. I kind of had this love affair with Chicago since I was really young. My stepmother is from here, and I came up here when I was 13 or so to go to my dad and stepmom's wedding. And I just, for some reason, I'd never been out of Texas, and it was just the most novel, incredible thing to me, Chicago, this big city. And And it had always been kind of in the back of my mind, and I'd always, you know, talked about it first jokingly. Someday I'm going to move to Chicago. Someday I'm going to move to Chicago. And then I toured for about 10 years in a couple of different bands, and every time we'd come through Chicago, you know, I just wanted to be here. So I always talked about it, and then there's a great guitar player here named Joel Patterson that I play with quite a bit, and he came down to Austin when I was living there, and we played, long story short, he came down for a couple of weeks, and we played a bunch of shows, and then when he was heading back home to Chicago, he said, "So are you going to move to Chicago, or am I going to come to Austin?" And I said, "Well, funny you should ask, because I've been wanting to come to Chicago for a long time." So then it was kind of this whirlwind, because it seemed like right away my wife was looking for jobs, and we were like putting our house on the market, and wow. We were here. And so, so it was a long time in the making. And then all of a sudden when the decision was made, I think we were here within like 5 months.
Oh man.
So anyway, and it was great. I came, I've been playing with Joel ever since, and Alex Hall, the three of us, Modern Sounds, we've been playing, and I joined Alfonso Ponticelli's band for, I don't know how long I played with him, maybe 7 years or so at the Mill and all around. And so I feel like I kind of showed up and was fortunate to fall in with all these great musicians right away. And I was instantly busy, which was the big concern that I was leaving Austin where I was playing all the time and I was going to like fall on my face.
Well, I think also though, I mean, Joel Patterson, I mean, you know, he's like terminally busy. So that's a perfect guy to like get locked in with and come up to Chicago to start playing with, you know, cause he's playing in every single group known to man. I interviewed him at the Blues Fest and it was like, I'm like, well, which 10 groups should we talk about first? And then we'll go from there. So you came up and you're playing with Joel and you're doing all that. Now, how did putting this kind of a band together, you've got to get charts together, I would imagine. It's putting the repertoire together for a band, the Fat Babies, to play the 1920s and 30s style music. I mean, that music usually isn't like, you know, you could get 7 or 8 guys together and just sit down and start playing. You got to get charts. You got to work out arrangements and all that. How did that whole thing come about? Because that's a process in itself.
Yeah, well, initially it was just getting together and playing tunes. I mean, we didn't really rehearse or anything. We had our first show at the Honky Tonk, our first show was at a place called the Black Rock that had like a, I think it was like a monthly dance there that was put on by a woman named Nicole Wood. And, you know, I just said, I have this group. I don't really know how it's going to go, but, you know, they're all really good musicians and we're just going to play. So we just showed up and we played, we just faked tunes that we all knew, and it was a blast. But then Andy Shum, who plays cornet in the band, is really remarkable arranger and composer, and you know, he had said, you know, I want to start bringing charts in. He started bringing in these charts, and we were really horrible at I, for one, was really horrible at reading these charts. As a band, we just didn't have a lot of experience. A few of the guys definitely were experienced at that, but I just remember at first he brought a few charts in. They were relatively simple, and I remember we kind of like screwed them all up, and then he was like, I don't know if this is going to work. Anyway, but he kept bringing him and bringing him, and now it's just kind of funny because now, I mean, we've done our third album and some of this stuff is, you know, orchestral in character. I mean, we're doing like Paul Whiteman's type stuff, some of them, and it's like, it's helpful that we played 2 weekly shows for 10 years and Andy is constantly, you know, he can't not be writing something. So almost every Tuesday at the Mill, he has something new for us.
Wow.
And then Paul Asaro, the piano player, he's also a great arranger. So anyway, it kind of happened like organically, and it wasn't really this, you know, grand idea. None of it was really like a grand, you know, idea. Like it wasn't the, you know, I feel like a lot of it is kind of just luck. Like I just happened to start this group when a bunch of people were, you know, when the time was right and a lot of young people you know, thought it was really cool, and they'd never seen a band like that. And there really aren't many groups doing kind of what we're doing. Like, we do like a mix of like transcriptions that are very authentically from records, and then original songs, and then we just play tunes, we fake tunes, we I don't know, it's like we're always doing something different. So it's not just like, you never know what you're gonna get, you know?
Yeah, well, and I also think you guys play the music, it's a different presentation, I think, than getting, you know, some of the guys that have been playing it for like 50-60 years. Not that they're any, you know, not that they're bad players or anything, but I think that you guys have some sort of a little energy just because of your age group. And then you guys also have a following that's around your age. So it's kind of an interesting vibe. You know, all these people are totally into it. I remember seeing you guys, I think the first time over at the Honky Tonk years ago, and it was packed, you know. Were you guys doing Sunday nights over there, I think, if I remember right, or something like that, maybe Mondays?
Yeah, Sundays.
And I mean, it was packed on a Sunday night. And it was packed with people in their 20s and early 30s. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. But now you guys have grown, too, because, I mean, you're playing festivals. You mentioned you had so you've got an album coming out now on Delmark, too, August 16th, that we talked about before we came on, called Uptown. And is that is that going to be your third or fourth release on Delmark? Because you've been on Delmark with a couple other ones, too, right?
Yeah, we've done this will be our fourth on Delmark. And then we've done a few others that are kind of, they were under Paul Asaro's name, but it was the band with him. We did a couple for Rivermont Records. One of them of all, those are normally more like specialized, like he did a whole album of Fats Waller music, and then he did a whole album of Jelly Roll Morton music. So we've done, I don't know, maybe like, this will be maybe like our seventh album, but our fourth for Delmark. It's coming out on August 16th, and I think it's really great. It's actually the first album that we've done as an eight-piece, because we became an eight-piece band when this really remarkable reed man, Jonathan Doyle, moved to Chicago for about a year. And so when he was leaving to go to Washington, we went to the studio and just made a record of what the band had sounded like. And so this is our first one as an eight piece.
Wow.
And it's a little it's a little different. It's like it's amazing how much one horn can add, especially when you're, you know, playing a lot of arrangements. It's like it definitely fills out the band, makes it much larger and more interesting to listen to.
Mm-hmm. So now he moved. He moved away right after you recorded the album. Figures, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean that was the plan. He was only coming for a while, and we played for a while, and then we knew he was leaving. So I said, I want to record what we've been doing. So it was like a week before he left, we went into the studio and recorded. So we still do about half the shows as an eight-piece group with Eric Schneider normally playing, and half as a seven-piece. And I think that I don't want to like jinx myself, but we have a really great guy that might be coming to town to play with us. So we'll be a full-time eight-piece band again.
Oh, great!
So anyway, but yeah, it's a great record. I'm really excited about it.
So the name of that is Uptown. That's going to come out August 16th on Delmark, and it's delmark.com for everybody to check that out, August 16th. And, of course, fatbabies.com, B-A-B-I-E-S.com, just so everybody is on the same page here. Now, you guys are going to be playing at 150 in the Von Freeman Pavilion at the Chicago Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 31st. What can people expect to hear on that set? Are you going to be playing some tunes from the new recording? Are you
going back? Yeah. I think we're going to play mostly tunes from the new recording. So, and the new recording has a handful of originals, a couple by Andy Shum, and then one by Jonathan Doyle. And then we have kind of more, you know, it's like adding the another read kind of like pushed us into like, you know, it's kind of subtle, but it's like all of a sudden the band moved ahead like 5 or 10 years. Wow. So we were doing music from the early 20s and mid 20s. And then this record has a lot of like, almost like pre-swing, like right before swing was the thing. So we have Andy Kirk and his 12 Clouds of Joy and some Benny Moten and James P. Johnson, Willie the Lion Smith. And so it's kind of like a little more in that direction, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Less like, you know, 20s stuff, more like 30s.
Well, you know, and you mentioned you've got originals on here too. So it's interesting to me because, I mean, you know, you guys are playing 20s and 30s style music. And then to have, you know, 2019 and somebody's writing in the 1920s or 30s style. I mean, is that what it sounds like? I'm assuming, right? So you guys are writing in that style, but it's from 2019. Right. So that's kind of an interesting concept all in itself.
Right. It is. I mean, they're great. I think that, I love the idea that these guys will write a tune and they bring it in. It's like any band. You write a tune and you kind of have an idea of what it's going to sound like, and then you bring it in and inevitably it sounds just like us playing the song, and it's not exactly what was in your head, but that's kind of the beauty of it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, I mean, there is this balance where if we play something from a record, it's like, do I really want to try to sound like I'm Bill Johnson on the bass? You know, a lot of times there's always this decision where it's like, am I just going to play this, or am I going to try to play it like the record? And with the originals, obviously, it's just like, well, just play the tune.
Right. Yeah.
if the guy that wrote it and arranged it doesn't like what I'm doing, he'll tell me he doesn't like it. But yes, it does. You know, just because the instrumentation and the way we all play it, it comes out sounding, you know, definitely it sounds like in that style.
That's got to be something too, because I mean, you're the bass player in the band, and you know, there's, you know, horn players, obviously, reed players, drums, piano. But finding your own voice in this style of music is got to be something that's interesting, because, I mean, is it even possible, I guess, is my point. Because, you know, I mean, you guys are playing in that style, but you've been playing this long enough now where, you know, every musician's trying to get to the point where that sounds like Bo Sample playing bass in the Fat Bass.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you even think about that, or are you just trying to recreate the sound and stick to it, and then whatever naturally happens just happens, and if it sounds different because it's you as opposed to somebody from the 1920s or 30s, great. Otherwise, as long as it sounds in the style of the music, you're ahead of the game anyways.
Right. That's a great question. I think I've gone through phases. When I first started playing, I just played like me, but I didn't really know a lot about what we were doing. And so, it didn't serve the music as well as it would later on. And then I went through this period where I was thinking like, well, I need to almost like play this role. Like now I'm, you know, this song sounds like it's, you know, whatever, Gene Goldkett. So I'm going to try to play like Steve Brown, who played on the Gene Goldkett mm-hmm. records. And I went through that for a while, and then that was just a little upsetting to me too, because then it's like I'm just being an actor, which is fine. Some people do that all the time in mm-hmm. various kinds of music. But now I've kind of gotten back to it. It's like, okay, well, I've learned and sort of to the best I could, like learned and internalized a lot of these great bass players from that era. And now I can actually go back to just playing like myself, and it actually sounds more appropriate,
right?
If that makes sense. It's almost like I have this vocabulary and I can use it when I want to, but I'm not going to just box myself in into mm-hmm. these roles. That's the way I do it. I mean, I feel like if you asked a bunch of musicians that are playing this stuff, everyone would have their own opinions about it.
Mm-hmm.
But But I do think Andy and Paul and their arranging are pretty amazing at arranging, you know, almost like Duke Ellington, like specifically to the members of the band. I mean, when John Doyle joined the band, it was like all of the Reed parts in that book are very John Doyle, you know, and all of the, you know, trombone parts are very much for Dave Bach. It's like, it's kind of amazing. And I didn't notice it so much until we would play other people's charts. Like we would play a festival and we'd back someone up, or somebody would bring an arrangement in and we'd play it. And I'd be like, this feels weird. You know, we're so used to Andy writing to our strengths, you know, that when you read something like that, it's, you know, it just kind of like put it all into focus. So,
well, it's really amazing too, because I mean, you know, having, first of all, the way the whole thing happened, the way the whole band got together organically pretty much, and you guys started working together, and then to have like Andy and, you know, Andy Shum and Dave Bach, I think you mentioned, they both arrange stuff and write stuff. I mean, to have that resource, a lot of bands don't have that resource at all. You know, they have to go outside and hire people and everything else. So, I mean, what a lucky happenstance for that to happen for you and, you know, for the band to be able to have that resource. It's incredible.
Absolutely. And I mean, if I didn't have Andy and Paul, we would have just been playing tunes, you know, and it would have been fun for a while. Maybe it'd still be fun, but it definitely would not be as fun. It's like the mix of these really intricate arrangements. And now we're at a point where people are playing three and four instruments we have a couple of guys in the band that can sing, and we have like vocal harmony parts on some of the songs, and Alex is bringing bells, playing like percussion and bells and soloing. And it's like, these things I never would have even imagined.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway, I feel it's definitely great. The hard thing now is doing it for so long, like not just falling into a rut of like we could very easily just show up and do the gig every week and that would be comfortable, but now it's a point where it's like I feel like adding new musicians is the easiest way for us to kind of like kick us in the butt, like, okay, now you're gonna have to do something interesting,
right
you know?
Well, and that's always the trick, right, when you're playing a steady, so you're at the Mill every Tuesday night, what is that, 9 p.m to 1 a.m
right?
And I mean, you guys have been there forever, and then you're playing at the Jazz Fest, and then I know that you have shows popping up all over the place, so everybody can get all the info at fatbabies.com, thefatbabies.com. But all right, I got to ask the obvious question before we wrap this whole thing up.
Guess what the question is?
Why the name the Fat Babies?
I knew that was going to be the question.
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, I'm looking at the name, I'm like, wait, I got to ask them, why the Fat Babies? Come on.
Well, there's no real interesting story behind it, but the story is that when I was in high school, there was a guy in my biology class that had this saying that he would say, for some reason always stuck with me, where he would just say, this is in Texas and it was really hot, and he would always say, you know, man, it's hotter than a fat baby out there. And I have no idea where this came from. I've actually like looked it up online and asked around, and I don't know if this is just something that this particular guy said or came up, or it's just vaguely or saying. But anyway, it always kind of stuck in my head, and I had a few band names forever that I would always kind of jokingly. And I won't tell you the others because maybe I'll end up using them. But when you know, I'd always say we should call our band, you know, whatever, and it's typically like kind of a funny name. And the mm-hmm. Fat Babies is one. Like we should be the Fat Babies. You know, that's really funny. And so it seemed fitting because we're playing hot jazz, and it's a saying about, you know, it being really hot outside, and but the interesting thing is, and it was a lesson learned, is that, I mean, I used the name because I didn't really think the band, I didn't want to call it my name. I didn't want to just be boasting on the jazz, whatever.
Right.
And
right.
So, I didn't actually think, oh, this is going to be something that's real and we're going to be putting out albums and we're going to be playing around. And I may have thought a little more about the name if I had
to. Yeah, you're going to be on the marquee. You're going to be printed in the Jazz Fest program as the Fat Babies. You would have never thought right. that. But actually, I dig it because it's kind of like what we were talking about. You know, you guys are in your 20s and 30s. You guys are playing this stuff. And I love the fact that, you know, your friend down there in Texas was saying it's hotter than a fat baby outside. I don't even know what that means, but I guess it's hot. And you're playing that style of music because you could have very easily called it, you know, Bo Sample and Hot 7 or whatever, you know, and that would have that would have sounded like a trad band. But this is kind of sounds hip. And obviously the merchandising, you know, you've got plenty of opportunities to come up with wild stuff for that too. So I love it. So, well, that makes sense then. See, I've always wondered, I'm like, what, am I missing something? Is there an album from the 1920s called The Fat Baby or something? I didn't know what was going on. This makes a lot of sense now. Good.
Right.
All right. So everybody can check you guys out. 1:50 p.m. Von Freeman Pavilion at the Chicago Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 31st. Of course, that's in Millennium Park. The whole festival runs August 29th, Thursday. It starts about noon, goes until 9 o'clock, and then all day Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Millennium Park. You can get all the information on our website, chicagojazz.com, and I know the city has everything up on their website, and the Jazz Institute at jazzinchicago.org. They've got everything listed on there. And then, of course, you can see the Fat Babies every Tuesday at our favorite spot as well, up there in the Green Mill, because as Dave Gemmelow says, all roads lead to Uptown. So that is always happening. And then you've got a new album, August 16th, called Uptown, coming out on Delmark Records. And Julia and Elvio and Steve Wagner, I'm assuming they all had a hand in putting this whole thing together. And you guys record over there in the legendary Delmark Studios?
No, we actually recorded at Electrical Audio.
Oh, okay.
Over on Belmont, which is where we've done a couple of our albums, and just the band sounds really good in that studio, so we did it over there. Steve Wagner mastered it, and yeah, Julia and Elbio were definitely very helpful and involved. And we have a great album cover that actually was done by a good friend of ours in town, who Eddie Campbell, who did the he's a graphic novelist that has done quite a few really well-known graphic novels. So it's kind of a cool cover with a drawing of the corner of Broadway and Lawrence.
Oh, cool.
And so anyway, I'm excited about it. It's our first out, you know. One of the things that was different about the new owners of Delmark is they said, do whatever you want for the cover. You know, and I said, well, we've never had artwork because it was kind of always a rule, like, you got to have a photo, which I understand. But they were like, yeah, do whatever. If you want to do artwork, fine. And so I thought, well, we've never done that. Let's do it.
So
it looks very different than the others, which is kind of a nice change.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's interesting. I know Julia and Elbio and Steve, and I love, you know, Bob Kester. I've known him forever, and I know you have too. And he was a great, he's the founder of Delmark and all that good stuff. But I feel like Julia and Elbio are taking Delmark into the 21st century here, and it's going to stick around for a very long time. And the fact that you guys have, what is it, 4 recordings out with Delmark, or is it just a couple recordings?
Right.
I can't remember. 4, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's 4.
Yeah,
this will be the 4th.
I mean, so that's incredible. And I have a feeling you're probably going to have some copies available at the Chicago Jazz Festival when you perform on August 31st.
Right, absolutely.
Excellent. All right, Bo. Well, I appreciate you jumping on today. And, of course, all the information at thefatbabies.com. I think we covered everything. Boy, this has been a great conversation. I've always wondered, and I wanted to connect with you guys, and I'm glad that we made this happen.
Right. You know, actually, as you're leaving, one more thing. I kind of forgot. We're playing a show at Space on August 30th, too.
Oh, okay.
Which is the day before. The evening of August 30th will be at Space.
Oh, nice.
I blanked on until right now. But anyway, I got that in.
All right, good. August 30th at Space, August 31st at the Jazz Fest, and then Tuesdays at the Mill, and the new recording August 16th on Delmark. I mean, you got a busy month coming up here.
That's right.
And you know what, so, I always say is, you want to hear a musician complain, just give him a bunch of work. But I don't think you're complaining, so that's okay.
That's right.
All right, well, I appreciate you jumping on the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. And, of course, everybody can hear more episodes and also watch some video episodes at chicagojazz.com. The new issue of chicagojazzmagazine.com is coming out August 1st with Dee Alexander as our feature interview. And we will be down at the Chicago Jazz Fest doing live interviews and videos and all that good stuff. So stop by our booth and say hi. And until next time, we appreciate you listening. And thanks for listening to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience.